Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everybody, I'm Sammy Strutt, Head of Member Development for Bigger, and I'd like to welcome you to this Continue to Learn webinar. Today we bring together a panel of four experienced course managers who will be discussing the effects of COVID-19 crisis on golf courses and teams at both large and small member and proprietary clubs. I'm pleased to welcome our panelists today. We've got Mike Bush, the Group Course Manager for Crown Golf, Andy Ewens, Course Manager at Woking Golf Club, Craig Haldane, Golf Courses Manager at the Glen Eagles Hotel, and Scott Reeves, Course Manager at Leyland Golf Club and also Bigger Chairman. Please feel free to ask any questions via the chat function that can be found at either the top or the bottom of your screen, and we will pose the questions on your behalf. This is a new format that we've not done before, so bear with us. We're all learning on this, so we will endeavour not to speak over each other and to keep the questions ticking along at a fair pace. So to kick us off, it would be great to hear from each of you about the situation at your club, how many staff have been furloughed, how many are still working, and whether or not they're on reduced hours. I was going to kick off with Andy, if that's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. We're a team of nine. I decided that we could manage with three. So we went down to three. The other six had been furlonged, but the club are paying them full pay. The three of us that are in, we're all doing staggered times. We're doing 8-hour days, the same, but we're all in at different times. But we're only going to keep it for us. We want to do it black and white, so we're just three of us going to do most of the time, all with everyone staying furlonged and us three just keeping after the course. We don't want to keep rotating too much, so we want to keep obviously the virus down as much as possible. So we feel that's the best way for us, just have three of us that are doing it all the time. There's us three, then there's another two groups. If one of us does get it, then our group goes down, the next group would come in in place, but that's how we've done it at the moment.
Yeah, okay, great. How about you, Scott?
Well, there are six of us full-time in my team. We've gone down to two. I felt quite strongly that I should be kept on. The course manager is the right person to be kept on under the circumstances. We looked at the essential maintenance guidelines and I looked at how long it really takes us to do things at my course, and I felt that we needed two people to carry that essential maintenance out. So we initially started with myself and one other guy. He, after a three-week period, was furloughed, and we brought somebody else in off the bench, and he's been back on with me for a week. So he's got another 2 weeks or so to go. We may rotate with somebody else on the team, or we may keep him on. I don't really know yet, but hopefully it's on until we're back to something approaching normal.
Yeah, whenever that will be. So how about you, Mike? You're in a different situation with looking after several golf courses for Crown Golf. How many are in the portfolio? 23?
I used to be, Sammy. Guys, I'll just say now, keep looking up because my screen is up there, so don't think I'm just staring up into space. But yeah, so Sammy, we are now 16 clubs across the UK. And obviously vary from pay and play to membership to resort and private members. So we've got a diverse group and obviously different standards at each site. Each site gives its unique circumstances and things we need to deal with. But so we took an early stance as a company. We looked at each club and just treated it as an 18, 27 and 36. So regardless of sort of the stature and level of that club, we decided that every 18 and 27 hole complex would have two staff, and the 36 and plus would have three staff. So, and we also made a decision, pretty much like Scott, that we wanted all the course managers and the deputies where available to be the two guys who would stay on site. We wanted the skill set on site. And the only thing really threw up some anomalies were underlying health conditions, which some of our deputies and course managers have got. So they were classed as a high risk, so they had to take had to be furloughed. But apart from that, yeah, it's pretty standard deputy and course manager on each site. And then we, for the group, we decided that we needed a mechanic, a floating mechanic. So we set up a guy, one of our mechanics, shared mechanics, Cameron. He's in a truck and he will go to any club that needs him. So that's pretty much how we're set up.
Okay, great. And how about you, Craig? What's happening up in Scotland?
Not too dissimilar from the guys. To take you back a step, you know, when the whole lockdown was announced, we as an organisation, it was all about people, you know, first and looking after our people. And we discussed the option of furloughing each and every one of the colleagues right off the bat for 3 weeks. And we felt we could do that, so we did. Obviously, being up north, we were, you know, slightly behind the guys down south in terms of growth rate and what have you. We felt in 3 weeks, nothing dramatically would go wrong to that, you know, to that measure. So it was a case of, right, everyone for 3 weeks. After that, the next spell of 3 weeks, we brought in three on the entire estate. I'm furloughed as a course manager. It was a different spin. We looked at our, as a business, how we got to get through this at the end, and everyone is in a better place as a team. So from a cost perspective, it was a business decision that way. However, you know, we've got very, very good lead assistant, plus two greenkeepers. So that went okay for 3 weeks. Growth started, and that was enough to do the essential maintenance that was requested of us. You know, the basics, basically. And then as of yesterday, we brought in an additional three colleagues. So today, we are six guys on site and one gardener. So that's overseeing the 63 holes of golf and the hotel gardens, estates, and the whole bank shoot. The way forward really is we remain furloughed up until such point as we feel agronomically and growth rate wise, we need to start ramping things up. And that's what we're doing. So we're taking it on a week by week basis, and Stephen is leading the team. I'm obviously supporting from the side. Amazing what you learn in these circumstances about communication and getting, you know, getting things done in a different way.
Yeah. Just as a matter of interest, how are you communicating with the other members of your team?
From my perspective, telephone call mostly. We have a weekly update with the leadership team on a platform similar to this that we have internally in our organization. And it's a daily comms back and forth to golf. I'm very fortunate in that I live 10 minutes from the course. So if I'm absolutely, you know, needed to, I can hop in my truck and just remotely drive around and keep an eye on things, which I in fact did this morning. So, yeah. You know, truth be told, sticking to the guidelines, sticking to the rules as best we can, obviously. But yeah, you know, technology is so good now in terms of sharing videos with each other, pictures and the like, you know, but I think all of us would agree, you know, we've got good colleagues in our team that we trust and can rely on to keep things going.
Is anybody else using anything other than telephone? Any email groups, WhatsApp, that type of thing? Yeah.
Just WhatsApp group. We have one or two technophobic members of staff, but I had to insist that a WhatsApp group was set up and joined by all of them, because they needed to feel, even though they could have been furloughed or can be furloughed for anything up to 2-3 months, we just don't know yet. So it was important to me that they were part of the group and that we would use pictures of activity on the course so they knew what was going on and that they felt part of it, that they were, you know, still in spirit with us on the course. So I post pictures and things like that, and there's a bit of banter goes backwards and forwards. That's really the primary way of the furloughed staff keeping in touch with myself.
Yeah, how about you, Andy?
Yeah, we have a WhatsApp group, but I ring them every week just to speak to them, see how they are and their families. But it's funny, with the WhatsApp group, we always use it normally. But since they've been furloughed, it's really gone quiet, because we don't really want to post too many, you know, doing work, and because obviously they're at home. So to be fair, it's gone a bit quiet. But just speaking to them on the phone at the moment's been the best thing. They'll get them a good chat with them for 15, 20 minutes about what's going on and here. And we sort of get on that way much easier, I think.
Is that a similar situation for you, Mike? I mean, you've got quite a few different teams to keep in check.
Yeah, so there's several WhatsApp groups. So, yeah, we have all the guys, we have a WhatsApp group for the course managers. So then we have a COVID WhatsApp group for the guys who are working. So if they're lone working at weekends, we've set up a COVID group for that, just so we've got guys going in doing lone working. So it's a check base in the morning and a check out when they leave. And we also, every week, we do a conference call with all the course managers every Friday in touch base, go club by club, any issues, any machinery faults, any issues they've got at their clubs, and we just go through club by club.
Are you trying to implement any sort of socials to keep everybody engaged throughout this period and everybody chatting to each other? Anybody?
We have a platform at work called Workplace, which is really a Facebook platform for the workplace. It's actually run by Facebook. And you know, each department will have their group, so to speak. Things that we've been doing really for those not in and for all really is just engaging with industry as much as possible, setting up webinars where possible, engaging with people we know. We were very fortunate to have Carmen Magro deliver a talk to us just as a team based on the Solheim Cup and the learnings from that. So, yeah, a lot of information goes throughout the entire organization through that as well. And there's actually a lockdown group being formed, and the chefs in the hotel are in the kitchens at home sharing recipes.
Excellent.
Girls that work in Little Glen are doing fun things to do with the kids, reading gardening tips and all these kind of things. So there's a heck of a lot of information going on there, and banter and chat, and just keeping the culture alive, keeping the spirit of the place going, which is fantastic to see.
Yes, yeah. Anybody else got any socials or anything like that going?
No, not from us.
No, it's interesting. We've actually got we have some of our staff are furloughed, and we've got a bigger pub on a Friday night. We all go down the pub at 5 o'clock and have a little chat, and the boss does a little quiz for us, and it's just a bit of fun, really. It just sort of separates the work week from those of us that are working the work week from the weekend, and it's like, okay, stop working now and go to that. We've got a quick question. Do the individual panelists have direct influence on who, if any of the employees are unfurloughed?
Yes. Yeah. I there's one particular member of staff who's an apprentice, for instance, and he only joined us at the start of the winter. He's not been trained up to use machinery and so forth. So that was quite an easy decision to ask the chairman not to keep him off, as much as he's got all the enthusiasm and what have you in the world. He wouldn't really be a great deal of use to me at the minute without having to train him up to use everything. So you have a little bit of input on that one.
Yeah.
The thing for us, Sammy, was still is, being furloughed, everyone being furloughed was not easy, but at least it's a level ground, level playing field, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then for us, it's about engaging with individuals and looking at their individual situation. I've got some guys living with the grandparents, looking after them whilst their mom and dad are doing elsewhere. Some people are going home on their own to a flat. Other people are high risk and might have really, really high asthma or such like. So we've really, really worked on an individual basis. And as a team, we've made it very clear and practical to the guys that when you do come back, I'll be having one-on-one chats to make sure what your situation is, and then bringing back the guys that are in closer proximity to the facility who are on their own. I'm very happy to say that as a team, everyone can do everything. That's not an issue from resources.
Yeah.
But Scott's right. You've got to look at your resources and get the right people in to function correctly. But for us, it's about the safety of the people and making sure they aren't bringing anything back to us and vice versa.
Yeah. So with some indication that golf may be one of the first sports to open up again, due to it lending itself quite nicely to the social distancing measures, what do you think is going to be the biggest challenge that greenkeepers are going to face once the courses reopen? Scott, you're nodding quite a lot there. With you.
It's expectation. It's expectation. They're going to come back and they're going to think that everything is fantastic. That The course has been empty, so the greenkeepers must have all been beavering away, making everything absolutely perfect in their absence. And we're going to have to manage that. There's going to have to manage the expectation prior to opening or partial opening, communicate effectively, and then, you know, once they're on site, you know, explain and build relationships back up again with golfers, you know, because there's going to be inevitable disappointment. So there's one thing we know about golfers is that their sense of realism is leaves a little bit to be desired sometimes. But that's my personal view, is that expectations can be the highest challenge we face.
Yeah. How about you, Andy?
Yeah, the same. It is expectations, but I normally do quite a bit on Twitter, a lot of members from me, but I stopped all Twitter as soon as this happened, just because members don't know what to expect. Then if I started putting pictures up of everything, it all looking nice, it's the little things for us. You know, we can keep the surfaces looking okay, fairways, greens, tees, but you know, it's the streaming, the roughs, you know, the weeds, spraying, it's those little things. And if members come back, see the stripes on, I found that, you know, on photos put on, they say, wow, great. And if they do, they're like, oh, that doesn't look very tidy. So we sort of kept them so they don't know what to think when they come back. They just hopefully expect, they know that there's only three of us looking after the place, so they're really happy about that anyway. A lot of the members live close by, so they're walking around, because we have public footpaths through our golf course, so they can see what we're doing, so they keep in touch a bit. But the problem is what you're doing, the golf course down the road could be doing something totally different, and the members speak. So it's going to be a hard one when one golf course might look absolutely outstanding, that have had most of their staff there, and the other one doesn't. And going from public, private, exclusive, they're all going to be different.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that we're actually going to have, when the courses do start to open up again, that's not necessarily going to have your full teams back in, are you? So,
not at all, because everyone's off. They've all got commitments. Some of mine, they've got their wives are working and they look after kids. So it's going to be difficult sometimes to get the staff back.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot to think about over the next, you know, weeks, months to see, but to wait and see, really.
Yeah. How about you, Mike? What do you think the biggest challenges are going to be for the teams of greenkeepers at the courses that you're in looking after?
Yeah, I think first of all, we're going to be managing tee sheets, the levels of play, that the, you know, the demands can be high. It's going to be those people. We all saw it the week, you know, it was a weekend before it was announced, the lockdown on the 23rd, that, you know, golf courses, we had green fee days where it was just insane on those golf courses, but people just were not adhering to the policies, you know, trying to do social distancing, they're high-fiving on the greens, they're just congregating outside the clubhouses, and they didn't help themselves. Unfortunately, it's going to be managing that again, you know, when they get in the car parks, when they meet up their mates, they're all going to be in groups. So I think that's one thing we're going to struggle to manage. But for us, again, expectation is going to be high. At the moment, we're not, again, like you've got the rest of the guys, we're not putting anything out on Twitter or Facebook. We're trying to keep that down to a minimum. But also, you know, at the same time, it's a May, April, May is our two major renewal months. So at the same time, we don't want to sort of be putting out negativity about the courses, the fact that we haven't been able to maintain them to the standard they should be, because we're asking people to pay them money. So at the same time, we need to manage that expectation. But nearer the time when we know, potentially when we, in the middle of May, if we come back into golf, we'll have to manage those expectations. But at this stage, it's not something we want to broadcast where we're at, so we're just sort of keeping it quiet.
Yeah, it's kind of a juggling act, really, isn't it? Of trying to keep everybody happy, really. So, I mean, for you, Craig, obviously Gleneagles, home of the Ryder Cup, that type of thing. What do you think the biggest challenges are going to be for you and your guys going forward?
Well, I think if the question really is, what's the challenges for the greenkeepers, and that's maybe a focal area, is acceptance. We are perfectionists and we want things really, really well. And I think the guys are going to have to come to some form of acceptance that it's not going to be, you know, absolutely perfect, even while we're out there, and we're not going to get the full cruise right away. So, you know, our ability to really deliver that standard as much as we want to do that is going to be challenging. You know, we're going to have to just internally accept that it's not going to be perfect. And that in itself is quite a different mindset, I suppose, that we need to look into. And then I think communication has never been more important. You know, right now, we should all be working on what we say, how we say it, and very importantly, when we say it. You know, we really should not be preempting any communication or we might be doing this, we could be doing this, we might be doing that, until we get some clear guidance, you know, as to when that might be. Of course, behind the scenes, we're working extremely hard on putting the plan together. If this happens, we do that. If this happens, we do that. So you do that quietly. But once we know and we've got a firm date in play, then we can really start communicating to the membership what the expectations need to be, and then work out, you know, exactly what time frame we need to get things to the standard. And then if it's going to be one golf course, two golf courses, three golf courses, how that affects the number of people that we bring in, importantly as well. So there's so many variables to look into, aren't there? And I think it's really important that we don't all jump the gun too soon and kind of give false hope almost.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, on the flip side of this, do you think that the break from play has had a positive effect on the course?
Yes and no. I mean, ultimately, if we're all brutally honest with each other, you know, rest from play is obviously going to create, alleviate some pressures of sorts. You know, depending on your mowing height and frequency, again, your surfaces are going to maybe not be as tight as you want them. We certainly, you know, we're still up at the higher cutting heights on all surfaces, and the frequencies aren't even close to more than once a week. We're hoping to get two cuts a weekend this week, with a bigger number. So, yeah, but I don't think it's going to take long for those to come back. But yeah, I would say, you know, think of the things that we're talking about. It's all about mowing, but no one's really talking about nutrition. And you know, you can go out and get your essentials from the cafe and get your nutrition from there. So we need to think that way as well on our golf courses. That's really the primary need right now, is making sure that our turf is you know, well fed, so to speak, or good nutrition and healthy. And that's our key focus right now.
Yeah. Any of you having any challenges with the point that there's no golf on the golf courses? Mike, you're nodding, so I'm going to come to you.
Yeah, obviously, with again having several courses around the UK, we've suffered various things. So up in Hertfordshire, Mill Green, we had a hockey tournament on the 8th green at the weekend, which you can imagine did a lot of damage. We've had motorbikes riding around the courses, motorbikes burnt out on the golf courses in Croydon, Addington. We've got endless walkers. I know most of you guys have looked past, but walkers, golfers coming out, playing, then offering money to keep quiet. That's quite a lucrative business if you're into that. And the worst probably thing as well is the animal damage, bird activity, rabbit damage. And unfortunately, I haven't caught deer, drive Richard nuts there. So the deer are trashing the greens and bunkers because there's no golfers on the golf course. So we are suffering from a lot of animal damage because there's just no one on the golf course. And the other thing, which is frustrating, but you can see why some people have done it, we're getting a little bit of theft on our driving ranges. So we've had a lot of driving range mats and nets stolen. So people are obviously setting up their own driving range in their back garden. We're hoping that some might return that when this lockdown's over, but on a whole, yeah, we've done okay considering the amount of people on our golf courses. So mm-hmm. All things considered, not too bad.
I think you've had a few people on your golf course, haven't you, Andy?
Yeah, we've got because we've got a couple of public footpaths running through a few of the holes. We're quite lucky in a way where our golf course is right in the middle of a very nice estate in the way, so we haven't got some of what Mike has with motorbikes and everything so much. But we have a lot of people, probably up to 300 people a day walking through. And we've actually, the secretary got in touch with the Residents Association and allowed them, we've opened the course up for people to walk just to sort of help them really. But with probably 60% of the people not knowing about golf or play golf, so they walk everywhere. And where, you know, the surfaces are good, walkways have come back lovely, but where they're walking now, we're having trouble. So they're walking through the heather. We've got new pathways all through the golf course now, which is upsetting, really, when we've worked so hard to get the heather where it is in a short space of time. And now there's just footpaths everywhere. But it's gonna be a hard thing, people walking through the bunkers, you know, riding, cycling around, but you can't really say much. It's one of those things at the moment, you have to sort of let it be. And but the biggest problem is when we do open up, is how we can control people sticking them to back to the pathways. You know, and people just won't understand to start with, especially if people are still furloughed and we're open and they still want to walk every day, dogs everywhere. So it's that's going to be our trickiest stage, I think.
Yeah. How about you, Scott? Have you got any issues with this?
Yeah, a little bit. We've had, you know, it's I think the first week or two was the hardest, where there was the novelty. Oh, I'm not at work and I can go out for a walk, or I'm not at school and what have you. And we had a few issues with kids and what have you. People who, it seems to be a common thread, people not understanding what a golf course is and what the sort of, I guess, the etiquette is, and just thinking it's just a big open area, I can do what I like. And then at the weekend, so that kind of died down a little bit. The members have organised themselves into a rota basis where they take their exercise. The guys who live near to the course, they've got a kind of a rota going where they'll take turns walking around the course on a security basis in the evenings.
Okay.
Not challenging anybody, just making a presence to be there on the course to deter people from walking on. But then we had a guy at the weekend playing with his son. And I think he's been playing the last few Saturdays. And when challenged, his biggest gripe was that he was being filmed and that he didn't seem to see anything wrong with him playing golf. He's not even a member. He just chose to come on and, you know, have a round, you know, but there was nothing wrong with it whatsoever. But I think he's he's been deterred now. But it really, we've done very well. There has been the odd divot in a green and this, that and the other, but it's not been anything like what we saw at Walton Heath, fortunately. So.
Yeah. How about you, Craig?
No, I mean, you know, Scotland's free to run with dogs and stuff like that. So we're very comfortable, used to having walkers go through the state. Dogs being on leads is not being as followed as it should be. And am I out there, or are the team out there, you know, chatting people? No, it's not to that extent. We've had small little incidences, you know, but nothing to write home about. You know, if a kid's going down the back end of a tee with his bike, you know, it's not like they're scrambling out there, you know, like we saw the other day. So it's not a train smash. A lot of walkers, you know, a lot of people taking advantage of getting the exercise, and they you know, they're doing that very well. And but you can see, I think, even around our homes and stuff like that, certainly in this area, you know, people are really, really mindful of things and the social distancing. Even when they're walking, you know, a couple of people walking with the kids down the street, and you take this to go past people. You know, it's the new norm, I suppose.
Yeah. It all looks like we don't like each other now. So how long realistically do you think it's going to take you and your teams to get the golf courses back into shape? I'll come to you, Andy.
I think the main surfaces, we're not too far off, really. You know, once you go down in height a bit and the mowing regimes are okay, you know, pre-mowed up and everything. So, but I think it's more... For us, it's the spraying, you know, spraying of weeds. It's a lot to do. All the heather needs sprayed. So it's difficult to put a time on it, because once the golf comes back, it's going to be full on. I think every golf course is going to be full up from start to finish. So it's trying to work in between these people as well. And plus, we're going to be on staggered time. So we're not all going to be back at the same time. So it's keeping people staggered. So it's going to take longer. But I think... Personally, within a couple of weeks, you can get the course back okay, even shorter periods of time. I think the course will be fine. It's just from a greenkeeper's point of view, to be, like I said, perfection, you expect everything great. So, you know, you're not going to have the greens cut and rolled every day and looking great. I think we're getting back pretty quick. It's just our expectation of how we get it done. But I think trying to sort out the staggered times and the safety of our staff as well, and making sure we can keep working on the golf course, but safely with the members around us as well. It's a hard one to put time on, really.
Yeah. Is anybody else, obviously you must, as course managers, you must be thinking about this. So what about you, Mike? How are you planning on getting the golf courses back into shape?
So yeah, we're working at the moment. So we started last week putting plans together across all the sites. So we're working on a big master plan, and obviously site specific as well. But most on the whole, like Andy's already said, the surfaces aren't far away. You know, so we're looking at some sites a week to 10 days. You know, and they'll be up to a standard which is acceptable. They're not going to be where we expect them, but they're going to be acceptable to the customer. So we. At the moment, as things stand, we're in a good position, ready just to turn the switch and go.
Craig, you've got a much smaller team of staff working than I guess anybody would have suspected. So how long do you think it's going to take you to get all three golf courses back into shape?
Yeah, we've got kind of like a 2-week window in our mindset, really, in terms of getting it where we want it. I think that's very fair. Are we going to get, you know, 2 weeks notice or not? It's a whole different question. Like I said before, it's hard to preempt all these things. But I think, like the guys are saying, the big picture is the easy part. You know, getting the fairways and tees and approach the presentation from that perspective, not going to be too hard. It's more the quantity of services and at the ball roll and all that kind of thing. It's going to take a bit of time, and then obviously the detail, you know, that's going to take the time, getting the bunker levels right. And we're doing nothing to any hazards and stuff like that. Now they're going to be true hazards when they come back, I'm sure. An unraked bunker might be the new norm, who knows.
Who knows. How about you, Scott? Have you got the same challenges with bunkers and hazards and that type of thing?
Absolutely, yeah. I thinking about this, through the green, fairways, rough, tees, approaches, I have no concerns about at all. My two key areas, and I'm going to prioritise, will be greens and bunkers. Greens, the decision I took at the start of this was I'm not going to add a lot of fertiliser right now. You know, we knew there was a prolonged dry spell coming, so to manage that stress, you know, took the height of cut up. There's no need to manage them for daily play. So it's going to be about taking the height of cut down slowly, add some nutrition, some top dressing when we get an opportunity, just to refine the surface a little bit, those kind of things. And that shouldn't be too difficult. I sprayed a wetting agent yesterday just to try and combat some of the hard to believe, but some of the dry drought stress that we've experienced, which is bizarre on the back of the winter that we've had. And then a lot of effort's going to have to go into bunkers. A lot of weeding, edging, strimming, you know, and loosening up the compacted sand. But we may possibly bring in some volunteer effort for that. If we've discussed this, myself and my greens chairman, you know, if we can manage the social distancing aspect and keep people safe, then I'm happy to. Members want to do things, especially if they're furloughed. They want to be involved. I've seen a lot of appetite for that. So if we can manage that appropriately, keep people safe, then I think it might get things turned around quicker. If we've got some volunteer info, but it shouldn't take too long. I'm thinking 10 days to 2 weeks, something like that.
Yeah. So how many of you are actually getting volunteers offering services? Have you accepted, have any of you accepted any of those volunteer services to date? Andy?
Yeah, we've got members that live, a lot of members that live in the area, in walking distance, so they've actually got in contact to see if they can actually do some work. So we've got a team of six coming Tuesday, and then on a Thursday, different teams every time with the same main person. They'll just walk here, and they're actually doing the bunkers. So they're de-stoning and weeding bunkers and raking them, so it saves us. They're actually coming tonight. I was trying to put them off with the rain, but they're quite keen and they're coming anyway. So they're really looking after our bunkers, which is quite good. And they all have their own little sections, which they do a bucket and their own rake they have anyway. So, which is great, but we have an artisans. We're not having them in so much. We're trying to keep that away because they're part of the club and it'd be seen a bit funny. So, but with the volunteering members that only live by, so they're not actually driving here, so we're not actually feel we're breaking any rules so much. So they're really helping us with that side of things.
Yeah. Anybody else got volunteers coming onto the golf course?
I want to comment on, other than most of my team who have been on furlough have been put in the hand up to just want to come and work and volunteer. And yeah. I've had a few requests from volunteers, and we've really just gone with the standpoint that, number one, if you're on furlough, you're on furlough. You're not going to jeopardize the business of you coming back. And number two, as much as we appreciate people who want to come and volunteer, you know, the guidelines are to be followed, and that's kind of our kind of response to that.
So we touched on a few minutes ago about communicating with the members to prepare their expectations for returning to the golf course when it reopens. Are any of your clubs actually actively working on that now? You guys have said that you've been not putting too much on Twitter, and anything that does go on is very low key. So what kind of plans have the clubs got in place, and are they including you in that decision-making process of how they're going to put that message out? I'm looking around my screen to see. Go on, Scott.
I've been doing course updates on a sort of semi-regular basis, every week, 10 days, something like that. Just there's a thirst for knowledge. And from what I understand, you know, not having been furloughed, I'm just being told how it is for people, and I'm observing. They seem to be kind of fed up with what they're doing, the TV stations, the box sets or whatever it might be, and the limited amount of exercise, so a bit of information about the golf course, they relish it. So I've been trying to do that, keep them updated, keep them, manage expectations a little bit along the way. But yeah, our club chairman, our general manager, and a few others have been emailing members regularly, and they've all got WhatsApp groups between themselves as well, I think. We've been posting pictures our GM's been posting pictures on Facebook and what have you of activity on the golf course. So that's been good. Give them a taste of what's going on. But I've been involved in the communication process. Yeah.
Right. Okay, good.
The club talk to the membership on a weekly basis through email correspondence and HMLs and what have you, and give them a flavour for things. And again, you know, I refer back to the until we know exactly what's going on, then we're not going to really give out a complete roadmap. But again, however, behind the scenes, we are actively working on a document, get back to work document, so to speak, of exactly how we're going to do things, what social distancing areas do we need to look at, how we're going to manage the check-in process, how we're going to manage the tee-off process. Is it going to be, you know, two balls, three balls, four balls, members only, members only. So there's all these different variables that we are actively working on. And yes, we're very much included in that. Returning to golf, as complex as that can be, once they're actually on the golf course, it takes care of itself. You know, yes, we need to do the pins and the bunker eggs, that's fine. But once you're on the golf course, you're everywhere. It's a means of getting in and getting checked in and getting through that process, and you know, getting your cart and getting your bag. There's going to be a lot of changes in that process for sure.
Yeah, lots of individual things to think about, isn't there? That in the normal times, there's just no thought onto them at all. Yeah. Where did we get to? I have got a couple of questions. So talking about communications, has anybody's membership numbers been affected so far?
For us, I mean, it's been really positive. Surprisingly, at the same time, but really positive. The members have been very, very, very supportive, and the numbers have been great. So not what we... Well, we anticipated a good response, but better than we thought. So on a whole, I think people are just eager to get back and play golf, so and support their clubs. So it's been really positive so far.
Any of the guys?
Yeah, we our members have been really supportive. Our secretary emails the members every day. It's really good, actually, to be fair. He does a funny dog of the day. So all the members send a photo of their dog, and he writes a description of how the course of history. The pro does a strategic how to play every hole, how he would play it, and all the members can feel free to fill in and write their stories about the course, and they all get printed. So it's quite a good thing that he keeps them up to date. And the members are really, and he can tell how many members have read. So all of them are reading it and they really enjoy it. And keeping them updated on the staff. And that's the main thing. The members are actually asking after the staff.
Yeah, that's
and the
nice.
Course, but which is good. So I think it's been a great time. I think everyone realises that everyone's in a certain situation. So everyone just wants to help each other, really. So
yeah,
it's great for our sort of club. It's nice to work for a club where you know that they're actually looking out for everyone. It's for us.
I think we are going to see a bit of a sea change, really, since it's been the greenkeeping teams that have been the ones going in and keeping the businesses ticking over, really, so that the clubs can reopen once the lockdowns lift. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how things change, how the mindset changes towards the teams.
I think it's an important point that twofold. I would never call us key workers, but in our industry, I suppose.
Yeah.
But also, the responsibility that we have to make sure that we are adhering to the rules so that we can come back. And it's really important that we don't, take unnecessary advantage of some of the guidelines, Now we're very, very, very mindful of that, and we really feel it's a responsibility to make sure that we do the absolute things we need to do, so that when the government asks for a document from our industries, we can show them very, very clearly that look, we are able to adhere to the rules, we are able to implement the right practice, so that we can in fact get up and running, get golf going again, get our guys back off furlough, and crack on.
Yeah, I think none of us know when the lockdown will end, but we know it will end eventually, and we may well know what restrictions we're still dealing with then when the lockdown does end. With more of your staff returning to the workplace, how are you going to go about ensuring safety of a larger team of staff? And are any of you what practices are you planning on implementing?
I'm happy to come in there first, if you don't mind. Kind of what we were doing prior to lockdown, Sammy. I mean, we were very proactive again in disinfecting surfaces, cleaning. I mean, the guys were a bit like, what we're doing this for initially, but, it's become normal now, So the steering wheels before, after the washdown, the whole bank shoot. So I think the safety issue, the number one thing for all of us is going to be maintaining the safety of our people. Because they've got to come to work and they've got to go home to families. So we need to make sure everything we do is limiting their opportunity to get sick. Almost have the mindset two ways, that they all are sick coming. So what can you do to avoid that getting it spreading? And then they all are healthy coming and they're not going home with anything. I think everyone's doing this. I mean, there's so much good information prior to the lockdown on Twitter with the thing industry was doing. For us, it's a staggering of staff. We've got a bigger crew, not nearly where we want to be for the summer, and I don't think we'll get there. But staggering starts. One thing we were doing prior to lockdown was bringing in an evening crew, letting the guys have a rest all day and then coming in after lunch and working through. Only a small crew of four or five, but my goodness, we learned a lot from that. So disinfect our surfaces, cleanliness of machinery, cleanliness of your bathy area, kitchen area, ablutions. I think masks will become mandatory. That's my personal view, and I'm for that. And obviously the social distancing will continue. Yeah. Once you're out on the golf course with a rake on your shoulder, and you're pretty much on your Jack Jones, so we isolated out in our jobs, which is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. How about you, Andy?
The sort of same, especially what Craig said, before the lockdown happened, suddenly everyone, is wiping down all the surfaces, you're bringing your own tea and coffee in, everyone was eating in their cars or in different areas. So you sort of knew what was happening. And now we're down to three, it's quite easy. We know each other inside out, so you do your own thing. But then I think the hardest part is bringing the people back in to keep them, because you've got to remember, these people might not have worked for 6-9 weeks.
Yeah.
What's their mental health like as well? Some of them are stuck in with kids where their wives might have gone to work. So they've suddenly gone from working outdoors for 20 years to sitting inside for 2-3 months or whatever, and then suddenly coming back to work, right, straight back into it. So it's I think that's the hardest part, is managing the safety and actually telling people, you know, you can't just come and start talking to each other again. It's not going back to how it was when you went. It's making sure that the plans are in place and they're all stuck to. Because you can see now, you know, when it first started, everyone was on lockdown. It was really strict. And now the cars on the road, everything. And it's the same with staff. You know, you start off really strict and get into bad habits coming through. So it's the hardest part, like Craig said, the safety, trying to keep your staff. Actually, when they get home, you know, and you've got to think of their families as well. So it's but that's where we have to sit down ourselves as managers over the next, you know, week, 2 weeks, when it could come back and you never know, and actually have make sure all these plans are in place. And they can't, you know, everything changes every day. So you just got to keep adding to the plans that you've got, and keeping communication with all, you know, different greenkeepers as well, to see what they're doing, because everyone next door, all the golf courses around here, do different things, and it's to work with each other.
How about you, Scott? Have you what safety things have you put into place?
Well, as Craig said, basically we kind of ramped up to this, and it's going to be, we're plateaued now, so we'll be carrying out the same things we were before the complete lockdown. If it's a case of like partial staff coming back or what have you, then we'll probably look at the makeup of the team. There are four out of the six of us who live on our own. And so we may well say, well, they're the people to come in then, because then you're reducing the risk of infection there. But yeah, we've adopted all the things prior to the lockdown, that has been spoken about already, disinfecting surfaces. You know, we've gone to the extreme of, you know, we have to fill out a timesheet each day, so everybody has their own pen initialed, so you don't touch anybody else's pen, all these kinds of things. But yeah, it's pretty obvious stuff, really, sensible stuff.
Any innovative ways of dealing with safety measures, anybody? Or is it just pretty basic? Everybody just keep clean. Coat yourself in disinfectant before you walk anywhere.
No, you inject it, Sammy.
Oh, sorry. Yes. So I have a couple of questions here from the chat. So if you just bear with me while I read through it. Do you think that the recent focus on plant health as opposed to growth as adopted due to COVID-19 will become the norm from now on?
May I?
Yep.
No, it won't. Because number one, the pressure is going to be, and I'm not saying that's a good thing necessarily, you know, perhaps we should focus more on plant health. I think we'll all think again a little bit more about our management practices, but essentially we're in a business of producing turf for the owners of the course, and producing services for the owners of the course, and we have to give them what they want. You know, I wouldn't want to fall into the trap of thinking it's my train set, and oh well, now I'm going to focus all on plant health all the time, because in the halcyon days of the furlough I grew lots of bent grass rather than poa. You're not going to sacrifice things, but you have to remember that you're there to produce a service for play for your customers, and those requirements of the playing services come first, not some sort of esoteric idea of, you know, what heaven looks like with bent grass and fescue everywhere. My personal view, that one.
Yeah. Any nods or shakes of agreeing or disagreeing from anybody, or I think it will be what it is, really.
I mean, everyone's going to look at things differently. You know, they've got time now with, you know, golfers. They've got time to reflect and look at different practices, different plant nutrition. I think it will give everyone have a different perspective. It's never going to be the same after lockdown. But I think Scott's right. You know, the market, the consumer will demand the service we produce now. I just think some guys will just look at it differently because they've had time to reflect. And it's been a good process for me. It's been a great process. I know it's a negative thing, lockdown, but it's been a good time for a lot of us to regroup and look how we do things.
Can I just qualify what I said? It has been really interesting, because as I fell back and didn't put lots of nutrition on and what have you, to see how certain areas of the course have developed has made me think a bit, for sure, you know, but the overriding factor, my personal view.
I agree in principle. However, I think our expectations, like I said before, our acceptance is also going to have to be moved along. You know, if the guidelines are that you can only have X amount of golfers on your facility, and by the way, you aren't going to be able to get more than 3 cuts a week on services, blah, blah, blah. Well, then, you know, as much as we want to get the services as good and that needs to be the primary focus, agreed, we may not have a choice but to actually take advantage of that in some way, shape or form, and do focus a bit more on health. But you're right. I mean, end of the day, our job is to produce the service. The minute we get the opportunity to focus on that, yeah, it's pretty much going to go that way pretty quickly.
Sammy, I think a good example, really. So this week at St Melian, we birdie cut the greens on a week Monday and cut them. And then because of the heat, the 22, 23 degrees, we didn't cut them for 7 days. Craig and I spoke about it the other night. So 8 days, we didn't cut the greens. You know, I can't get away with that during golfers, you know. So I haven't stressed the greens. I've kept the height up. So it's completely different when you're in COVID in lockdown, because you're not having to produce that surface. So there's no way that you could leave this time of year greens for 8 days to not cut them.
Yeah. We're getting a couple of questions coming in, which is looking at your budgets and your future budgets. Do you think that when the clubs reopen again, that you're going to see budget changes and reductions? And as course managers, how are you going to deal with being told that you're going to have to cut budgets?
I think you've got to be quite, have a business head on. All course managers have, really, and look the rest of the year, you know, what's unnecessarily, you know, like when we do come to open, you know, we are, maintenance is supposed to be in July. So we, you know, those sort of things you've got to forget about. Really, the clubs have to make money to survive in a way, to a degree. For the rest of the year, it will probably be essential. If you need to buy it, you know, it's essential, but trying to keep it down. And looking into next year for us, it'd be subscriptions to make sure we can keep the membership. Can members afford to keep being at our club next year? So we have to look. It's not just a 2 month, 3 month, 4 month. It's over the next 2-3 years. How can we budget to keep the members, but keep the course how we want? We, you know, might not be able to do the projects that we've had planned for the next 3 or 4 years. So it's, I think it's a longer thing to look at, not just a shorter thing for budget wise, but it's, I think we're all good at our jobs. So, you know, you can plan yourself of what's essential and what's not, but you have got to put your business head on and think the club has to make money. It's not, you know, about everything else. Mm-hmm.
So perhaps a good thing to be looking at during furlough is how to do a good budget. Teach yourself Excel and budgeting.
I'm interested to see how industry reacts as well, because this is going to hurt the big machinery manufacturers, the big fertilizer manufacturers as well. Their costs are going to increase if they have to set their factories up to resume production with staff further away from each other, with all sorts of social distancing issues in their production facilities. Their costs have to be passed on somewhere. So I can see costs to end users, golf clubs, rising as well, potentially. So you know, there's going to be all kinds of consequences. Budgets are in.
So, I mean, on that, talking about suppliers, et cetera, you know, is anybody having any issues with getting deliveries or supplies that they need to keep themselves going? How are you coping?
So far, it's been good, really, so I mean, to be honest, the fertiliser and machinery parts have all been great. Fuel slower than normal, but that's just demand again. But on a whole, I have to commend the guys, you know, the suppliers out there. They've been great through this period. You know, it's a couple of days longer sometimes for some parts, but, you know, during these circumstances, they've been great.
Yeah. Anybody else experienced, or is that the sort of the same feeling?
Yeah, same.
Generally, it's been okay. So at the very, very beginning of the lockdown, a throttle cable snapped on a machine. And I think it was when it was kind of, what happens now? We don't know what to do. And our supplier had closed down. Then they gradually kind of brought people back as they worked out how to do it safely. Yeah. So I had about a week where, fortunately, the growth was very, very slow, so it didn't really hurt us too badly. But I was thinking, God, if this goes on for 2 months and I can't get that rough mower out, I might be calling in the farmers to bail this stuff off. It worked out okay.
Yeah, excellent. Well, we have been going for 55 minutes, unbelievably. So I'm going to just finish with one last question to end on a positive note. What do you think is the best thing that's happened to you during lockdown? I'm going to start with Andy.
The best thing?
Best thing.
I'll say the funniest thing was the first day of lockdown. The public suddenly sort of realised they could walk over the golf course, and it was, the sun was out, but it was only about 16 degrees, but it was nice sun, but it was chilly. I remember driving around with my jacket on, woolly hat, because it was still cold, and coming up over the brow of our ninth hole, and there was these two lads sunbathing down to their pants on some towels on the tee. And I just thought to myself, typical English, it was freezing, but they just there, and I just laughed, because I just carried on driving and just thought, oh my God, if that's the first day, what's going to happen now?
But what are they all going to come to?
It was just funny to see him in their pants, just think, what are you doing?
How about you, Mike?
Probably for me, actually, strangely, is going back on the tools. Actually, I've enjoyed, you know, it's been a long time since I've cut fairways and rough and greens, etc. So it's good to be back on the tools. I love having no golf, I have to say. I've got used to having no golf on the golf course. I like the productivity of it all. But yeah, for me, back on the tools, but also obviously with my role, I'm on the road a lot, staying in hotels, so it's nice actually to go home every night, apart from I have chores and have to do things for the kids, but apart from that, it's good to not have stuff on the
way. How about you, Craig?
It's truly understanding the value in time for me. I've never sat on my ass for too long. And I've always thought I was pretty good at time management, but now I really understand what you can pack into that extra hour or two that you have. Obviously, I'm the biggest advantage by a mile is the time I've got with my kids and my family. Emma Simpson is our director of people and culture, and you know, she sent me a really good message saying, think of this as a gift. And that's exactly how I've taken it, and a gift of time with my family, being more of a helper around the house as opposed to getting in the way.
I hear you're a dab hand at kitchens now.
I think I'm trying new things, you know. Pretty handy, had a few more recipes and whatever, and you know, just in our roles, we all spend an instrumental amount of time at work. We either put in the hose in the summer and we're off on the birthday or Christmas day, or you know what it's like. And to just really spend quality time and connect at another level with the family has been a blessing.
Yeah. And how about you, Scott? What's your positive that's happened during lockdown?
I'm going to speak sneaky and have two, if I may. I think it's been, this job is very hard at all times. It's tough going sometimes. And we focus on just getting things done and plowing ahead. But I've learned to step back and really appreciate how lucky I am to work on a golf course, to work in that environment on the mornings when the birds are singing and there's animals about and all that kind of stuff. You know, you really think, gosh, I could have been indoors, you know, throughout this. So I appreciate how lucky I am. And I've enjoyed, Mike said, the simple pleasures of just cutting grass or, you know, doing something on fixing a machine, doing something on the golf course. We've really learned to appreciate that. But I just wanted to say one thing that's really, it's not just me saying this, but I've been so impressed with bigger staff from our CEO right all the way through the team. I've been, even the furloughed staff, I've been so impressed by how our membership team have coped, how our communications team have coped. Jim's shown tremendous leadership. I've been very, very proud to be part of the association at this time, and also our board of management as well. We've been having weekly meetings to keep up with things and to you know, make sure that we're providing support to staff. So yeah, that's been a huge positive to me, seeing how I'm, you know, continue to be massively proud of Bigger.
Well, on behalf of all the Bigger team, thank you for that. We are working extremely hard to try and keep you all informed. So on that very positive note, we will end this conversation. And I will say to everybody listening that I hope that you've enjoyed today's webinar. I'd like to say thank you to all of our panelists. That's Andy, Mike, Craig, Scott, and Jim has been sitting in the background, although we've kept him hidden today, just in case we wanted to have a chat with him as well. So I'd like to thank you for joining us. I hope you'll join us again soon. Details of the Future Continue to Learn Extra webinars are on the What's On guide of the website. Well, I will end it all there and say thank you very much. And we hope that you've enjoyed it. And we'll see you next time. Cheers, guys. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Cheers.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.